Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And this is The Food Fight, a frank discussion of food culture featuring Australia's top chefs, producers and experts.
We'll chat about real issues and go places others won't.
This podcast travels throughout the country, and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and speak.
And we pay respect to elders, past, present, and emerging.
This one's another Small Bites episode, and yep, this whole episode, we're talking about Instagram. Let's do it. We don't even have to do introductions and stuff anymore. We're just going to launch straight into these Small Bites, Simon. Hello, I'm Steph. This is Simon. We're doing another Small Bites podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Amazing.
In the kitchen.
We're going to talk about Instagram and social media for this one because, it's a massive part of the hospitality industry.
It's so big now.
I know.
And it's in the last maybe 5 years, it's ramped up. In the 5 years before that, it was becoming a thing you need to think of. Before that, people wouldn't have an Instagram account.
Yeah.
They might have Facebook.
Yeah.
And now it's... Now, so many restaurants have someone employed just to social media.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's an expense.
Yep. After I published my first book and we had, all the professional photography, everything, recipes, all this stuff, I didn't have Instagram.
Yeah,
right. I'd published a book. I don't know if I'd potentially even published the South Coast book before I started using Instagram.
Well, Caveau had an Instagram, but rarely used it.
Yeah.
And that was 2016.
That was before you bought it.
Yeah.
So tell us, to start with, tell us a bit about how you got into using it for your business and when you sort of realized how important it was.
In the years running up, personally, I knew that Instagram was more for food than Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook became more of your web page.
Yeah.
It was where people would go to that for information. So for opening times, for menus. That's people almost treat that as your website. And Instagram was more of where you might post some photos. But I think now it's people's that's almost your shop front. That's your selling point. People will go to you based on your Instagram, and then they might check your Facebook to find when you're open or to see how to book.
Mm.
But Instagram is your selling point.
Well, I guess it's also the question now. It's there's so much shit we're going to cover. So this is going to be just a rambling conversation that jumps around a bit because we've only got half an hour.
Mm.
But do you think that almost Instagram has made websites redundant for cafes and restaurants?
I think you see more restaurants now with a Wix website.
Yeah.
Because, the difference costs, to get a website done is $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 and above $1,000.
Mm.
But you can do a Wix one and it's how much a week or a month.
Mm.
So I think plenty of people, there is still a clientele who want a website. I think you need a website, you need to be accurate, but it doesn't have to be, it's not your shop front.
Yeah.
It's for information purposes only. So it's people to find out when you're open, a couple of photos, some information. They might look at a bio page because you feel like you should have a bio page. But other than that, Instagram, I think, Instagram will draw people in. People go to your website once they know they want to book. But Instagram will actually get you customers.
Yeah, because, it's not often these days that people just Google online your restaurant,
well, but a lot of
right?
Time
they've already heard about
you most
of the time.
A lot of times if you Google someone's restaurant, the first thing will come up will be Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah.
Rather than your website. So it's very important where, I think even to the point, might be sort of skipping ahead a couple of steps here, but I think the way people plate nowadays is influenced by what looks good on Instagram photo.
I think that that's huge. Like, I think there's so much to talk about. We have to take a bit, these things one at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go. Let's start with what we want to get to is plating and Instagrammable dishes. Mm. But let's start with your experience at Caveau and like when you took over the restaurant and how you sort of felt about like your Instagram, because you obviously like you paid me to come and take photos.
Yeah.
And that was that's for website and Instagram and stuff. Mm. But was that like a conscious decision to be like, all right, we like Instagram is this important place now and we need to professionalize it and up our game?
I mean, I think the difference of being five to 10 years ago, professional photos would be solely for your website.
Yep.
You get some done and you'd have your little scrolly thing on your website and you have a couple of shots here and there and it'd be for that. Everything else would be on your phone. And then you realize that when you see someone who's got a very well curated and professionally done Instagram, it looks good. Like as soon as you click on it, so you see the grid, looks good. So I think we understood straight away that Instagram was the perfect medium for food. It's visual. Mm. It's looking at something. So yeah, so we got professional photos done, and it's another cost to your business. So it takes a little while, and you kind of learn how to take a good photo on your phone. But like having a good looking Instagram is important. And even like if you see the difference between professional photos and even a good one taken on an iPhone, you can tell a difference.
Mm.
Like if you've seen.
Well, I hope so. Well, or else I'm out of a job.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like you can see the difference between yours and other people's. Definitely. Other photographers, maybe less so. So I think we just knew like my Instagram is really food and wine.
Mm.
And restaurants and wineries.
Mine's like, the same, like that's what it is. Serving,
like,
that's it.
Like, and I even like encourage young chefs to be like, make sure you're on Instagram and go and follow all the chefs, all the restaurants. Like, it's a strong tool. Like, the amount of times I find producers, new ingredients, new plating styles, like, all comes from Instagram. Mm. So it really is the hub of activity. And I think you even see the trends moving so much quicker nowadays because people can see them on Instagram.
Well, we'll talk about later, like, how Instagram influences food trends. Mm. But do you think that you could have measured, quantified like the benefits of professionalizing your Instagram at Caveau with professional photos and all that sort of thing? Like,
I think, like if you have to be quite deep in your analytics because there are, and I used to run the Caveau Instagram and we managed to increase our followers massively. Like on first thing we noticed was if we put the same photo, same caption on Instagram, Facebook, you might get like 5 likes. I mean, we had 4,000 followers on Facebook and we ended up having 11,000 on Instagram. So pretty different. On a good photo, you might get 100 depending on what it is. On just a random photo, you might get 5 to 10 on Facebook. But then you'd get 200, 300 on Instagram for the same photo. Especially if it's like a meaningless photo. It's like the new Instagram thing of, have you tried this?
Oh, fucking hell. Anyone out there, any places out there, like if you're still writing, have you tried our new, like,
have you
whatever?
Seen,
yeah. Like, I think that someone one day some marketing person decided you've got to ask questions on Instagram because then people in the comments start answering those questions and engaging. But it's like,
that's
the funny question, the funny one is have you tried our new whatever choc chip muffins just made fresh this morning? It's like, well, no, because they're new and like they just came out of the oven and you just put them on Instagram. I wasn't there, so no, I haven't tried your fresh new whatever you've baked.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that it's so you can, like, if you go deep, and this is why it kind of, for certain venues, it pays to have someone to do it. You can get very deep in seeing how many of clicks on your Instagram lead to your website, lead to a booking.
Mm.
And that you need kind of, unless you're very, very savvy on social media.
Yeah, so you can see those click throughs.
It can be hard. Good example I always use is in the first couple, maybe first 3-4 months of Caveau, we did a pork dinner.
Mm.
So the premise was we'd buy 2 whole pigs from this local farm. And we'd use everything over 7 courses or whatever. And we post that on social media. And it probably would still be the most engaged thing we had, especially on Facebook. There was just like hundreds of comments of Steve tagging Barry being like, oh, Baz, pork dinner, fuck.
Yeah, right.
And like everyone being like, we've got to go. Oh my God. Like just comment. We're like, fuck, it's going to be a huge dinner. We were about half booked.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So it doesn't always translate. So I mean, that's maybe the dangerous thing is it's not the be all end all. It's still not as good as word of mouth. And actual kind of lived experience. So there is some, yeah.
But how much of your decision to professionalize your Instagram, like one thing that we talk about constantly on this podcast is the venues that sit as, you know, well-respected, like good restaurants, one thing that we talk about and a common thread throughout them is kind of attention to detail in all areas. Yeah. So like there is just someone or a group of people have an eye over every aspect of the venue, whether it's how the menus are printed or what the Instagram grid looks like or what the menu is and the collaborations that are done and then all the systems and the service style and all these sorts of things. Like how much is it, well, if we want to be at that level, then we need to pay attention to our social media presence as well. And that's just another little one percenter that you need to...
Yeah, I think that comes down to that. It's like you don't see a great restaurant at the sort of standard, we want to be at Cavone and we want to be at Bangalay with bad social media.
Yeah.
You might see average social media, but like there's a correlation there between if you've got solid social media, good photos of good food, there's correlation between being a good restaurant.
Mm.
I think like you could maybe have a bit of a haphazard amateur looking Instagram. If that is your restaurant, if you are that little kind of family run Italian bistro, that might have actually some benefit of not looking so slick because some people want that. But you don't see a good restaurant with bad social media anymore. With that in mind, if you want to be at that level, then your social media needs to be that level.
Do you know what the funny thing is though? Is that you actually do see bad restaurants with awesome social media.
Well, yeah.
Which is a really interesting one as well. Yeah. It's like, and that's what makes it hard to decipher sometimes. You might never have heard of it. I remember going to a cafe in Melbourne I can't remember what it was called, but the Instagram was so fucking, like they had so many followers. It was so well curated. They did heaps of those, like this was back in the day when people were putting syringes in donuts.
What the fuck was that about?
Yeah.
I still don't understand that.
Yeah.
We need to ask someone. Do we need to ask like John from
we need to ask someone about the syringes in donuts. But like it was that sort of thing. Like so they had all these pastries, like shitloads of things like rose petals and syringes in donuts.
What was like the shakes with like
the freak shakes?
Yeah, insane garnishes.
So that was a place in Manuka, actually in Canberra, that freak shake place that absolutely took off. Like it was like, I remember that was when I was living in Canberra still, and this freak shake place in Canberra just took off with viral like social content and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's another kettle of fish and we'll get to that. But and considering we've only got a small amount of time, do you think that Instagram fosters creativity or inhibits creativity?
Possibly a bit of both.
Yeah.
Everything moves so quick now that if you have a plating style or a technique, you put it out there, it will be copied. If you're a popular restaurant, it'll be copied quite quick. So in that sense, people have to be moving very quickly. And I think to the point where chefs are very honest and open about their stuff on Instagram, like maybe twofold. So a lot of time you'll see someone like explaining their whole process of what they did to a fucking floor sometimes, because they'll be like, so we started with this 6% cream milk cheese that we actually make in-house by inoculating with a 4%. And you're like, fuck. But you almost may as well to push yourself. And also, I mean, if someone does copy that, it's like fair play. You can probably do it. This is a kind of weird flip there. So I think it does in some ways, but then it maybe narrows your creativity because you are trying to make sure that it is an Instagrammable dish. Like, I mean, like look at, again, if you look at pastry, probably the most followed Instagram pages, businesses are pastry and burger places.
Yeah.
And you see all the burger places doing the same thing. And like burger places I don't get, because they'll post these like sky high burgers
But no one orders.
It's like,
they're not on the menu.
Yeah, they're not on the menu. Yeah. You couldn't eat them. It's just like a little chef's creation. But it will get like thousands of likes and heaps of engagement.
But is that just the like... Yeah, I wonder how that translates into business. I suppose it's a massive spectrum. But I don't know. I guess the thing that I ask about when it comes to the creativity side of things is I see Instagram stifling creativity in a lot of other industries, I think.
Like what?
I think that like a lot of anything that has a really graphic element to it. Mm. So I'm probably speaking out of turn because I'm not an expert in these sorts of things. But if you look at like anything to do with weddings on Instagram, I feel like these days all weddings look the same because there's this Instagram aesthetic that everyone's following. Everyone has this same sort of cursive writing saying Sophie loves Simon or whatever it is. The dishes that are used.
Filter on everything
as
well.
Yeah, it's like a similar looking filter. The light's similar and things like that. Like weddings might be an example or...
yeah, it's a good example.
I think that like certain types of art, like I think this is speaking out of turn a little bit, but like I do follow some florists.
Speak out of turn.
And I feel like some floristry is like, and that sort of thing. People get their inspiration from Instagram rather than figuring out what they're about. And the same with things like interiors as well, I see a bit of. Like
maybe it means like the fact that there's you've got so much access to good content and you can see the engagement. I think there's probably, maybe it's just more apparent, this copying. And you're always going to have people at the forefront, the top, are always going to change because they hate doing the same thing, but then the people who are just copying and just doing the same as everyone else does, because you know, because there's people at the forefront, there's people who just follow. So there might be someone who, the first person did a wedding like that, then everyone else saw it and was like, "Oh my god, I love that! I'll do that." And they thought, "Oh, we'll be the second." But there's 100,000 people thinking,
and like it looks great, and whatever, well, yeah, and I'm happy for people and things like that. Yeah. I don't know. I have a chip on my shoulder when it comes to people just replicating things that they see on Instagram, basically. It's like, because everyone has creativity in them, but it's like, maybe not. Yeah, you might be right. And that's maybe what it is. It's like people are like looking for inspiration and it's kind of like this, Instagram's this global Pinterest board of...
This is very off topic, but the whole like, I'm going to talk about TikTok for a second, if I may.
I don't know about TikTok.
Right, the whole thing about TikTok is like recurring memes is people take the same meme and just recreate them.
Yeah.
And
isn't that funny?
And, yeah. I'm like that. Like I've always been like, even like since like a child, I've hated copying or doing the same as everyone else. I've always wanted to like to a fault, do something different or do something original. Like I failed DT, like design and technology, because I didn't want to do the same little fucking clicky wooden machine everyone else did. But I planned this thing that was like way out of my the quality skill set, I could do, skill set, and failed.
Yeah, well.
But like I'd rather fail trying to do something original.
But yeah,
I was 12 at the time. There's no need for me to be original at 12.
Yeah,
but like I've always been like, to a fault, I don't want to copy. But now it does very much seem that copying's okay now. And there's like,
well, that's the thing about let's get back to food trends, right? Because it's like, where we see food trends now is via Instagram.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, something we've taken the piss out of heaps on this podcast is anchovy toast being on the menu at every restaurant in Australia.
Available at Bangalore dining.
Every wine bar in Australia has anchovy toast. Yeah, like, without
and a,
exception.
And a slight riff on it.
Yeah. And so, like, would that be the case if there wasn't such thing as Instagram? Are food trends like, I mean, were food trends like that before Instagram? So many examples,
but maybe not so prevalent. But if you went to any three Michelin star restaurant 20 years ago, they'd all have truffles and foie gras and lobster on. So I mean, so in some ways,
but
like,
isn't that just because that's a decadent, like, indulgent?
Yeah, but I mean, in the same vein, they would see a new restaurant would see another three star restaurant serving those ingredients. Like, well, we're going to serve those ingredients as well. Like, they even like one of Marco's shows, he's plotting how to get three Michelin stars, and he's like, I go to all the three Michelin star restaurants, I look at their dishes, and I compare mine and make sure mine are better.
Right.
And if all mine are better, then I'll win three stars.
Good on you, Marco. That's great. You know,
and he sort of copied some dishes and tweaked them a little bit because he knew that, well, if they've got three stars, we're doing this, I will basically copy that with my own little swerve.
Mm.
and I'll be good.
Well, the thing, like, so plating style is a funny one too, because
I think the
plating style has gone through numerous trends before Instagram.
But the top down shot,
yeah,
which I don't like, because I don't think a lot of my food looks good like that.
I think it's getting moved away from a little bit, that top, yeah, the bird's eye thing. I think people still are kind of mixing it up a little bit.
If you look a bit, it's very aesthetic. If you look at some, yeah. I mean, this is not a dig, but Louis, ex-Bar Rockford.
Oh, yeah, man.
His Instagram looks great.
Yeah, Louis Katoops, yeah, who's been on our podcast before. Like his Instagram looks so fucking good.
It looks so good.
Yeah.
But it is all that.
All the top down.
Top down. On marble. But, and his food looks good that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe we should give him a little text and be like, do you plate food that way, because that is aesthetic from the photo.
Yeah,
I feel a lot of my food doesn't look good.
Maybe we should call him.
Just run out.
Maybe and put him on speaker.
We could. We'll let you know.
You can cut it in.
So his food looks great like that, and it looks great. But is that stifling his plating style?
Or does that dictate his plating style?
Well, exactly. Yes. I mean, that's the interesting question. Yeah.
It does make for a really good looking Instagram page, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and so 86 is another one.
But then sometimes when just like that, and looking at like the grid on Instagram, I can see that as a whole, that looks very good. But then you look at a single dish, and they're normally quite far away, and you try and look, and you're like,
you don't know what's what.
What the fuck actually is that?
Yeah.
So maybe I got less because I kind of want to see exactly what's there.
So do you think then food trends have been like plating styles, like we're talking sort of more aesthetics, that sort of stuff's been accelerated by Instagram?
I think it's just quicker. I think there's always moves quicker? Styles. Yeah. Because I think to see another restaurant's dishes, you did need to see them.
What about it's been around for a long time and it's still around now, but I'm going to describe it as a pile of stuff on the side of a big round plate, just on the side, center.
Like negative space.
Yeah, plating. Just off center.
That's a fairly new one.
You use that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people do. Like great restaurants use that.
There's something
technique.
I think that might be a trend in that it was getting away.
It was from everything being in the middle.
That getting away from that trend of proteins in the middle, everything's rounded.
Yeah.
I think that was almost like a backlash trend. Yeah, and obviously you see that all the time with stuff. But then there's some dishes just look much better with everything. And you are seeing...
I think we're back to that a little bit in some places.
What you're seeing now is a lot of... And you kind of need a specific bowl for this plating, but it's kind of a very gently sloped bowl.
Yeah,
and you have a fairly small plating area in the middle, and everything's in that middle bit, and then you have a lot of kind of bowl around.
Yeah. That's really
and
nice.
And then it holds it like the kind of good things that bowls like that is you can pour a sauce in it, it'll hold a circle.
Yeah,
so it won't piss all over the plate.
So
you're seeing a lot of that now. So maybe it is less. It's not the meat in the middle, veg on the outside. It's everything kind of stacked up, which harks back to a trend of stacking shit
the
up a bit.
Stacks.
The old stack. So it kind of, I guess like any trend, it comes and goes. But I think social media, internet has just sped things up where you will churn. I mean, like that style of plating was around for 20, 30, 40 years before it changed.
Mm.
And now we've gone from that off to the side, negative space, to kind of back in
the middle
quite
quickly.
Well,
now we're just talking about plating styles, and I don't know, like this would feed into Instagram a little bit as well. But what I'm seeing now in terms of plating styles is less unnecessary garnish. Less flower petals and tiny little sprigs of micro herbs and stuff that. Like when I see something like when you talk about creativity, you look at Esther's Instagram page and everyone fucking loves it because it's like, I mean, Esther's just got sick food and that's a place to look for like genuine creativity. You know what I mean? It's like so many of the dishes coming out of those kitchens, Polly as well, are just like, you can tell that it's just not being copied by someone else and it's very stripped back. Like, so you're kind of looking at a, basically just like a bug on a plate with like,
I think their tone, texture and lighting.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Makes that food look very good. If it was stark, bright, white plate, you'd be like, that's a piece of black cabbage.
Yeah.
Like they have a very good idea of what their tone is, I think.
Yeah, and it just suits the restaurant and the type of food so well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But they're definitely, they're on the kind of modern style automata as well.
Yeah.
With that kind of like, that very...
Do you think that because of Instagram, people are putting more into their ceramics? and stuff 100%. Now? Do you think that that's an Instagram thing?
I think so. For one, I think you've seen white plates go away.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Like that, like, like color of your plates, like, you know, white.
White plates look so shit in photos. I think that people, like, when I did the Capital Cookbook in 2013, the second one.
Yeah.
It was just all white plates. White plateville. Not all of them though. Like places like Aubergine in Canberra, which was on the cover, and other venues had nice handmade ceramics and stuff like that.
You would rock up with plates.
Yeah. So when we were shooting, we'd have a big selection of plates, and like it was a little bit intimidating sometimes to tell like had chefs that were 30 years older than me to plate on their plates.
Yeah, yeah.
But like there were restaurants that had plates that like were the size of like a big restaurant dinner plate with a tiny little circle of stuff in the middle.
Yeah.
And when you're taking a photo of that and trying to get the elements of that dish like into the photo, there's nothing but white and the food.
Yeah.
And it's terrible, isn't it? You just can't take a good photo.
But then in a darker restaurant, a sort of like it turns on the dish. I've had dishes where I plated it on one plate and been like, I hate it. Change the plate, plate it the same way, and I've been like, I love it. It's a masterpiece. So I think, but like white plates in a restaurant, a darker restaurant, that looks different to a photo of it that's gonna go on your Instagram. So by the time the someone's already in the restaurant, you've kind of already got them. So is it more important to have something that's Instagrammable or looks good in real life? And I think that's maybe where social media is kind of blurring the lines and maybe in some ways resulting in a less good dining experience.
Yeah, possibly. Well, do you think so?
Like in my, you know, 1-2% maybe we're talking here.
Well, I guess one of the questions is let's talk about Instagrammable dishes and including them on menus on purpose and stuff like that.
I think
Instagrammable dishes made to look good. Are they made to taste good, or are they made to be interactive? Like, I guess, like what one of the best investments that you guys made at Night Parrot was the little fucking smoke bubble gun, because it's an Instagrammable thing.
Okay, like, I think this is what you're finding now. I mean, in the last couple of years, and maybe even whole restaurant concepts are starting to revolve around this, is the table side aspect.
Well, that's the next iteration of Instagram, because instead of it being photos on your feed, it's customers sharing videos of movement that's going on around the table.
I mean, video is always going to get more views. And that's been apparent. You know, yeah. That's why TV is more popular than radio.
That's why we've got a video camera right there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pain in the fucking ass, to be honest, but we've got to do it.
Chatted. But exactly. Yeah, prime example. You're watching us right now. So video is always more powerful. So, but it's hard to, you can't really create your own natural videos so much. So they're always going to be a bit produced. But like the best thing you have is just constantly people filming stuff in your restaurant, posting it to their followers, and it gets shared and it goes viral.
Well,
maybe.
I think that I think that Mimi's sets the standard for that. Like that's.
Amari Woodcut, the same. Like how many times? Like I see once a week, Gianluca in the front of house matches from Amari making pesto.
Yeah.
Every week I see someone post that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I'm still, like, if I'm in a restaurant, I might take one photo and that's it. Like, I'll be at one photo, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put my phone away now and try and enjoy it. But, you know, a lot of people are on their phones, and if you can get them, like you know, the bubble gun cocktail at Parrot, I don't think anyone gets it and doesn't film it.
Yeah.
Like no one doesn't film that.
Yeah.
And they've all got, sometimes like they'll like burst their bubble and they'll be like, oh, we didn't get it. Can you put another one on?
Yeah.
So it's like they're willing to wait another few minutes to drink their drink, because they want to get a photo of it.
Yeah,
so it's very powerful. And like, I mean, when we're fighting for customers, and that can be the difference between being, you know, full and empty, it's a pretty powerful thing. Is that making it better? I mean, everyone wants to have a cart. Everyone wants to have table side stuff now. Some things work very well table side. Some things don't. A lot of customers are just going to go like, give me my fucking food so I can eat it.
Yeah.
And I think like, possibly you might see with reviewers over the next couple of years, because reviewers, like, you know, we spoke to Miffy and Pat Norse recently, they get that sort of fatigue because, you know, whereas like you know, we might go, you know, a couple times a year to a restaurant like this. Some other people might go once a year. They go every other week to a restaurant, and they're all trying to pull out a cart to do something tableside. And I think you might see in next year or two this kind of this kind of little backlash, maybe little
cart
dig,
fatigue, little trolley
dig,
fatigue,
trolley fatigue. There's little digs in some reviews about the, you know, the obligatory trolley, because it's almost getting that way.
Mm.
But can you blame restaurants for doing it? Because it does work, because it comes off my fucking feed every week.
That's it.
Or every day of one of these tableside things.
Mm.
So there'll be some people who do it and it fits in with service and it makes the experience better. There'll be some people who copy and don't match it and it will take away, which is always going to be the case.
Mm.
But I think it happens quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think? I'm going to change direction because we've talked about cart fatigue. But what do you think about how Instagram is changing people's dining habits and the dining experience for people? Because there are people out there that choose the restaurants that they go to because they found them on Instagram and they've got a following and it's the cool place to be. And throughout their experience, they're constantly on their phone.
Yeah.
Like constantly. I mean, is this of concern? Is this like good for the restaurants if they're making money off people being on their phone and coming to their venue?
I guess for some people, that's the enjoyment. Restaurants have always been places to be seen for some part of society. So, maybe the question being is should these restaurants like even bother trying to put good food up?
Mm.
Like, should they bother seasoning?
Yeah.
when it's like a waste of salt.
Well, like when it's, speaking of salt, who's done the best out of a viral Instagram a viral Instagram restaurant? Fucking Salt Bay.
Yeah.
He's got restaurants. Can you believe it?
He's got restaurants around the fucking world.
And just something like 100 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
And he's still rocking his fucking sunnies and his vest, sprinkling salt on shit for.
He seems to be
like
at the
Premier
right
Cup
restaurant
players.
At the right. Like, I'm wondering if he's cloned or not. Because like I'll always see there'll be like, I remember just seeing one be like Frank Ribery.
Yeah, yeah. The French soccer players.
Yeah, soccer players seem to love it. And they're all getting the gold plated fucking steak. Yeah. And he was at the one in Dubai and old Salt Bay. Was just knocking around there.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are the chances if he's got like 20, 30 restaurants? Like, he just happened to be there. Does he look at booking? He's like, oh, okay, Frank's in at 2 at Dubai. Got to scoot back to bloody Portugal at fucking 4 to go do this fucking celebrity and back over there.
I reckon the celebs would call the restaurant and be like,
yeah,
we're not coming unless Salt Bay's there.
Yeah, maybe.
So where's Salt Bay going to be?
Yeah.
Like, and
he'll be there when you least expect
it. So funny. And his name's Salt Bay. Where's Salt Bay going to be? What restaurant's Salt Bay going to be at in November? Because I want to go.
What's his actual name?
Salt Bay.
Mr. Salt Bay.
Yeah, Salt Bay.
Like, what's his... I reckon I could ask 100 people and no one would know his actual name.
No one knows his name.
Does he even have a real name?
No, his name's Salt Bay.
I've never seen his real name put in an article, I don't think. I've read too many articles about him. Yeah. But I mean, that shows, like, He's made himself. I mean, I don't even know how many restaurants he had before. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that's a single act, a single tableside thing, a single person who's made a whole restaurant empire from that, from Instagram.
Mm.
I mean, that shows the power of it. And like, again, I mean, the question is do these restaurants need to, like, if someone's enjoyment, I'm not digging against, if someone enjoys going to a restaurant because they want to be seen there, because they want to put on their Instagram and they get joy from that, it's like, well, that's what we're in the business for, as a restaurant, to give people joy. But like, should they even worry about the standard of their food? Should that even be should it almost be like, we'll bring out one that's been like fucking, you know, there's like when you're McDonald's take photos and like the cheese is actually glue and the bun's actually sponge and like nothing's real. It's like, should restaurants like that bring out one of them people take photos of and then bring out their real food after? You know, like you have that display piece of meat and then you take it out and you chop from the one you've been chopping from and that one's just for show. Like, it's not like it hasn't kind of been done before.
Yeah, but exactly. Like,
would people care if that was the case? And then what they
as
bring
long
out,
as they got their photo.
And what they bring out is just a fucking plate of slop of everything like juiced up and chopped together. Like, would someone care? Like, can we do this pop-up?
Let's do it. It's just called like, Instagram.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like that. That guy in London who did the shed at Dulwich.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Excellent.
I mean, that wasn't a social media thing, but that was a TripAdvisor
thing. In some ways,
thing.
It was a FOMO. Like he managed to invent this restaurant, and enough people wanted to go there solely based on the fact that it was perceived as popular, that people booked and people would wait in line.
Yeah.
Not based on the food, not based on anything about like a traditional restaurant does. So food service, ambiance. It was. This is popular, I want to go.
Yeah, and it didn't exist. And he served For those who don't know what we're talking about, there's a Vice video on YouTube about a restaurant, inverted commas, called The Shed at Dulwich Hill, which was basically this guy who ran a social experiment to see if he could get a restaurant that didn't exist to number one on TripAdvisor in London.
In London, yeah.
And he succeeded in doing that, and it just started this whole cascade of craziness of celebrities and royals and crazy people ring up trying to book this place.
And he said the more he said no, the more they rang.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fascinating watch. And as you said, a good example of what people are willing to do to go to a place just because it's perceived to be popular rather than anything else.
And then he served them when he actually opened his friend's garden.
It's worth a watch.
And he served them like ready meals just put on a plate. And some people really enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course.
So, like, the food wasn't good, but they left happy.
Mm.
They left happy. So it does kind of put in perspective of like what is a restaurant now? Like, what is the purpose of a restaurant?
Mm.
Like, is the food second fiddle in a lot of restaurants? I'd say yes.
Yeah.
So I mean that's a fascinating turn. Where I mean that's probably always been the case in certain circles of life where these celebrity hangouts and people want to go there, but. I mean, not so mainstream and not at that like that premium casual level of restaurant.
Do you think? I think one thing that Instagram is fantastic for is like businesses and chefs in particular being able to tell their story.
Yeah,
that was just never something that you'd find in the past. Like we would get. You'd learn about the chefs that were kind of maybe a bit on TV or a bit, in articles here and there and stuff like that. But it was just one thing. And like, I mean, if you started following St. Peter when it first opened and have been following St. Peter from then until now, which we both have, you're there for the evolution of everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're sort of there and understand it. And one of the cool, that's a really cool example of utilizing social media to show the public that you're doing something really innovative and different. And it's a cool example of the public actually responding to something genuinely innovative and creative and being like, fuck, there's something really cool going on here.
Yeah.
Like, and let's support it. And you know, the proof's in the pudding now with what Josh.
Well,
Nyland's
I mean, I think the interesting thing is I think like Josh Nyland's Instagram has more followers than St. Peter, which is something where I mean that's a fairly recent phenomenon with the chef being more famous than the restaurant.
Mm.
I think the other thing, the good thing about social media and the internet nowadays is that it's. You can, I mean, I love this about it and kind of maybe hate it in equal measure. You don't have to be part of that same little crew of TV chefs who get recycled and recycled and recycled because they're friendly on the camera. Mm. They're clean. They're kind of happy. They have that traditional aesthetic. You can do your own thing and push and get into the media and promote your business and make more money that way. Mm. So I very much like that. Some people who manage to do that for me is sometimes like they're not. It's not about them being a particularly good chef, and that kind of annoys me as a chef.
Yeah,
but it's a lot more kind of egalitarian in that way of anyone can be a famous chef now.
Yeah. Do you know what the thing that's I don't think is egalitarian is that depending on who you are, you either love Instagram or don't like Instagram and don't like social media and don't like using it. Like, if I'm honest, I would like to be able to delete Instagram and not use it because I don't like posting on Instagram for me and I'm a photographer and I publish books and I'm always doing things and whatever. I always got something to share. But it's a chore for me. Like, I don't like going on Instagram and posting. But what the thing about the difference is – I'm definitely generalizing, but a lot of the time the people that like doing it, or the what's easier for people to do is to just go on and talk about themselves and about what they're doing that day and what's going on in their life and things like that. Whereas when, for example, my Instagram's more about the stuff I create rather than the about what I'm doing with my life.
Yeah.
It's a chore to fucking be like, all right, okay, like I got to post about this podcast that I just made, or I got to post about an article that I just wrote, or whatever. Like, so I don't know. Like, for the people that are really happy, and you know, the world's a spectrum of introverts and extroverts, and all those sorts of things. For the people that are extroverted and love to sort of share their life on Instagram and stuff like that. And honestly, the stuff that does get the most engagement are the personal stories and the personal photos and those sorts of things.
It definitely favors people who are prolific. Because you see some people and you see their story and you're like, you don't go 10 minutes in your life daily without posting. Like I have to sometimes when I post on Instagram is when I go on my Instagram and be like, oh, fuck, I haven't posted in ages.
Yeah.
I have to go through like I don't take photos of everything either. So sometimes I have to scroll and be like, fuck,
"Well, that's the thing." I mean, Dan Hong must really like posting on Instagram, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're listening, Dan, we'd love to have you on the show. And I actually really love Dan Hong's Instagram. And the main thing that I really love about it are the food recommendations, like around Haymarket and stuff in Sydney and other venues and stuff like that, to get that really specific.
Yeah.
Like he'll make a post that says like, go to this shop, not the one that has this because it's similar, but the one that has and order number 23 with the beef tendon or whatever. And you're all right, well, if Dan Hong told me, then I'm gonna believe him. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Pat Nurse does that really well as well. He's like shouting out smaller venues that probably don't have massive Instagrams and stuff like that and all that. And I love that. But like, you go back to Dan Hong. I remember when he did a massive tour of Europe and went to like multiple 3-star places and things like that. It was just like every single day that story was just firing like all day. And I don't know. Is that maybe he doesn't enjoy it. Maybe it is a chore for him too. Yeah, but like, I can't bring myself to do it that
like,
much.
I'll do it on like if I'm like away on a little holiday. I was in a hunter recently and I posted more than I probably done in the last month.
We did it in Melbourne. It's a lot easier when you're on holidays.
Well,
right.
I think maybe someone's as easy. If you've got a decent following, it's probably like, oh, there's plenty, you know, I got, you know, 40,000 people follow me. They follow me because they want to hear these things. Why it's most funny is people who are like commenting on their day. It's like, there's 200 people following. And I'm like, it feels like a lot.
Yeah.
It feels like a bit much. You're like, you're narrating your whole day. You're like, so I just went to the shops. And it's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
Like, who's actually listening?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Maybe when you have a following, it's probably maybe a bit easier to be like, oh, people kind of expect me to do stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm doing something
Well, that's the thing, because there is some point in the process where your Instagram becomes such an essential part of your profile.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people get jobs and offers based on their Instagram following, you know, like, and it's all part of contracts and stuff these days now too.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's like, we will give you money for things if you have this many followers.
Oh, yeah, fuck. I forgot to bring, we were supposed to do it. Speaking of Instagram, we were supposed to do a fucking, someone sent us something to taste and I told him we'd do it on the podcast. I will do it next time. No, well, that's funny. But that's a thing too, right? Like, there's so many people out there who, are constantly fucking receiving stuff to like whether it's free or you know. I don't know how much chefs get. Maybe they do.
There's quite a few chefs. I mean, maybe less in Australia, more so in Europe, I think, where there's some chefs who like aren't famous in any other means really, but are very much Instagram famous, and you see them with free shit and advertising stuff, and it's like, fuck, I'd never even heard of your restaurant.
Yeah,
and you wouldn't traditionally think there would be someone the brands will look for, but you know, they're very much looking for followers and content. Yeah. So I mean, it's
funny though, like, because you got to like, I mean, you do if you want to get that sort of stuff, if you want to get a profile and that's where what your goal is, or having a profile is a part of your ultimate goal, you got to do the work on social media too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I present radio and I present a podcast and we're on film all the time. So I know how to like talk to the camera or talk to people, talk to an audience. Mm. But I just don't like fucking putting my face on there and talking to camera and going, hey guys.
Yeah.
like for some reason, I'm just the stubborn. Yeah. Like I don't want to do that work because I don't like it for some reason. But people use it so effectively. Like Alice Oslovsky uses her Instagram so fucking effectively to communicate with her audience. Mm. And it's work. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a part of what I do and what I'm trying to achieve. And I'm going to do it. And it fucking works. Mm. You know, I'm just stubborn, and there's something about
to me half time it just does not occur to me. If I'm doing something I'm enjoying, I'm generally just enjoying it, and I have to think to put, even like someone's like, I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna post some stuff about this, and I'll just get to doing it, and it just literally just won't occur to me. And whether that's I'm in that sort of, about both of us in that generation where we, there was life before Instagram and sort of life after Instagram. We sort of like, oh, I do it, but like, it's not my first thought. Mm. Like, I don't do it, but I'm not like playing in the kitchen and trying stuff out. And I don't really think to, oh, I should Instagram this. I might take a picture of something like once it's done. But yeah, it's just not my kind of first port of call. And some people seem very on it. But I guess it's a decision you kind of have to make. That if it is important and it can make a difference. I mean, most chefs use it to make their restaurant full.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of baseline.
And most chefs, there's a handful. There's a lot of chefs out there who have their personal Instagram, but a lot of the time, the restaurant is the main hub for that restaurant. You know, like more so than the chef.
I mean, I think a lot of time, especially with some bigger organizations, the restaurant will be the sort of the glossy face.
Mm.
Then if you follow the chef, you'll get some of the behind the scenes workings.
Yeah, that's kind of nice as well.
I think that's normally good, because I think sometimes sometimes you see a restaurant, like especially just independent restaurants, the owner, chef, operator will also be the Instagram guy. Mm. And it'll be like, here's pictures of his dishes, his restaurant, adverts. Here's a picture of his daughter.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that seems like you should maybe split these. Yeah. Because it's not kind of coherent in that sense. Yeah. So there's somebody where it's just like, that's their one and only Instagram. And in some ways, I quite like that.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe this is like...
Do you think it... The old restaurants, and I think of a restaurant like Ottoman in Canberra, which has sort of had a hat for the last fucking 20 years or something like that. Like, I don't know how long the Good Food Guide's been going for, but it's been a long time.
Late
80s,
sort of, I believe.
It's had two hats occasion on and off as well. Mm. I'm not sure if they have an Instagram now. Maybe they do, but last time I checked, which is probably a year ago, they didn't.
Really?
I don't think so. Like, they might do now, but Sharif's definitely not on Instagram. He's definitely not on Instagram. And are these restaurants, are the types of restaurants, I suppose it's going to be a generational thing where eventually all the people that, all the oldies who run restaurants that don't have Instagram will retire, and their kids whatever. Like
a restaurant like that.
Will they get left behind eventually? Will a restaurant like that get left behind eventually with no Instagram?
I'd imagine so. It'd be a point where some restaurants, very well-known restaurants, they've got a website, they've probably got Facebook, they're findable, and people go to Canberra and they're like, we need to go there. They're in, two hats, and they're probably busy. So they're probably like, we don't need Instagram. But we'll get to a point where the younger generation are, that's their it's where they find everything.
Mm.
No matter what it is, information, businesses, where to go. So eventually they will just not have heard of this two-hat restaurant, but much of it takes quite a while.
Is it also we're talking about people go to a venue because they want to share the fact that they've been at this venue?
Yeah.
And if you can't tag it on Instagram, because the thing that people love about that is that if you take a video of Jordan Toft shaving truffles on your steak at Mimi's, he reshares that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So if you're there and you want to go to this restaurant and you take a video and you want to share it with the thing, and then they can't share it because they don't have an Instagram or whatever, is that leaving people behind as well?
I mean, it's almost the new TripAdvisor review is filming it and putting it on Instagram. Mm. And then the reply is getting the restaurant sharing it. That's almost how someone's had a good time now, because they'll thank you personally in their Instagram.
By reposting it.
Yeah, by being the best meal, 100, 100.
Yeah, 100, 100, 100, fire, fire, fire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of thank you.
The fire emoji is in the review.
I mean, a lot of people do it, but talk of creativity. If your comment is just three flames, then like, come up with something else, please. Just say something. The other funny thing about Instagram, which I'll bring up just before we wrap up because we're going to finish soon, but everyone now has to be a copywriter. So like,
yeah,
like captions. There's a lot of people out there who do not know how to write.
Very bad ones.
Yeah, and. Like, I know how to write,
yeah,
and I'm confident with my ability to write copy for anything. But, like, now all of a sudden, you know, a random chef that didn't finish year 10 and has just been in kitchens, like, and is a fucking gun that's a chef owner somewhere.
Has to write copy.
And, like, a lot of the time people are like, what the fuck do I write?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, when it comes to posting dishes and things like that, you can just talk about the dish. Mm. But I see in so many other industries as well where people are like sharing stuff, or they're sharing stuff about them, or they're trying to tell a little story about X, Y, or Z. And the copy is so boring.
Yeah, it's incoherent.
Yeah. And yeah, it's poor. Like, it's just, there's no flair to it at all.
Yeah. Definitely. I think you see some really bad ones, and I can kind of, you're looking at it, you're like, I mean,
that's the have you tried?
Well, yeah, I mean, but that maybe that's why that's so prevalent, because
people don't know what to say.
If you Google what should I say in a comment, the top five things of any fucking, maybe like it's probably a BuzzFeed article about it, would be try asking a question, do a call to action, and it's always the most basic ones. But like, I mean, like I'm fairly confident with my writing for things like that, but I would spend fucking ages. So why, like, it wasn't just like, it was kind of hard for me sometimes, like. Because I'll post, but I have to like write, reread, go through. And I have to like reread things like so often to like, and then go through spelling and capitalization, like all these things. Like one time, like, especially with Kavo, and we were trying to get names of ingredients right and maybe where they came from right and provenance and information. And I was checking through all this stuff and I forgot to capitalize Aboriginal. And someone, a lady from Wollongong, she listens actually, just hit me up and was like, oh, you missed out the capitalist name. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just spent like 25, 30 minutes just going through this and I missed like the most obvious one.
Mm.
I was like, sorry. And she's like, it's fine. Just like, I'll change it now. Mm. So like it's a little bit stressful as well. And if you're less confident at doing
especially when you're doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even like, just get spelling stuff right. And yeah, it's another little minefield. And it's another thing that, you know, chefs suddenly have to be
On top of,
yeah. When you're like, well, fuck, I never got taught this. Like, I did get a B in English literature, but it's another skill where you're like, fuck, I could do that as well.
Yeah, like, and to be honest, it's a really hard skill to learn.
I mean, social media in general is a like, there's so many things you have to be on top of, and like, people change their algorithms. Like, reels are really important
reels
now.
And shit.
Apparently, like, this might be hearsay, but like, clicking the little bookmark is the best thing you can do for a page.
I've never clicked a bookmark.
I click it by accident when I miss like the like thing. But apparently that's the best thing you can do.
Okay, well, so, I've never done it.
What do they even call it? Is it bookmark?
I don't know.
Favorite.
Maybe.
Save. Save this podcast on Instagram.
Click the right one.
Apparently that's...
we're supposed to...
Yeah, or just click them all.
Follow us.
Follow, subscribe, hit the bell on YouTube.
Is it bell on YouTube?
That's because that everyone, I don't know, all YouTube people tell me to do that.
This is what you should do. Right now, as you're listening to this, because we only release these mostly on IGTV, pause this video and tag five mates in the comments. And then we'll give someone...
Whoever tags the most mates.
Whoever tags the most best mates.
A bowl of...
We'll give them some free mandarines.
Yeah. I'm not sure where they came from.
I don't know. Fuck, how do we boost our social media? We'll figure that out. Maybe you can write in. Write in the comments of this video how better for us to boost our social media and increase our following.
Have you tried listening
have
to
you
our
tried
podcast?
Listening to our podcast? You can go back and listen to a great podcast with Miffy Rigby, Wes Lambert, Simon Tui.
Should be the name of this podcast. Have you tried our podcast?
Have you tried it? I think I want to call it Foodstagram because that's the number one hashtag.
All right, we'll go with
all right, that's enough.
Yeah.
Thanks, Simon. Cheers, thanks, man. Everyone. Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's simon_evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.